Many, many years later, another team in the state of Michigan calls a timeout in a basketball game when they do not have a timeout. What happened at the end of this game for the Detroit Pistons and that specific play? We're going to talk about that in today's episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast.
You are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's the deal? Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Pistons podcast. Per usual, I'm your host, Kuka Hill. I want to thank you guys for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons, hit that subscribe button, or leave us a five-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. And today's episode is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/LockedOn today to get started. The Pistons just lost the game to the Chicago Bulls. Somehow, some way, they made this a close game at the end of the game again. I believe this is like the third or fourth game in the past like few weeks where the Pistons are getting blown out, and somehow, some way, it looks close at the end of the game when you look at the box score. It wasn't really close throughout the whole game. The Pistons outscored the Bulls 29-16 in the fourth quarter to make it a tie game, and they had the ball with around 20 seconds left, down by two, inbounding the ball. Coming out of a timeout, Jane Ivey is made the inbounder. The lineup is Jane Ivey, Bojan Bogdanovic, Kojo, James Wiseman, and Hamidou Diallo. Actually, this happened with 10 seconds left, not 20, I'm sorry, with 10 seconds left. That's the lineup. And Jane Ivey is the person selected with inbounding the ball. And in this scenario, Jaden Ivey panics. He thinks he's about to run out of time. And he calls a timeout when the Pistons do not have a timeout. What went wrong in this play? Well, before I give my opinion on this, I gotta read this quote real quick. So Mike Curtis, Omari Sankofa, all the beat writers for the Pistons, they tweet out this quote from Bojan Bogdanovic. So Bojan says, the tweet reads, "Bogey on what he told Ivy after the timeout. It's not his fault at all. I think that all of us know, from the vets to the coaching staff, we got to let our rook know how many timeouts we got or not. So it came to that play because we were down two. We didn't lose a game calling that timeout." So if you read that quote seems to suggest that it wasn't something that was emphasized in the huddle before this play, that the team was out of timeouts. If that's the case, that's a major, 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 major blunder by this coaching staff. Major blunder. Major, major blunder. Now, I understand that the game was not just lost on that play. Obviously, the Pistons were down by damn near 30 at one point. Zach LaVine had the most effortless 40-point game I've ever witnessed in my life. The dude didn't look like he was breaking a sweat. He looked like he was barely even trying out there and was walking his way to 41 points. So, obviously, that's not the reason why they lost this game. I don't think anyone's trying to say that. But at the end of the game, I question a few things. One, I don't understand why Jane Ivey's inbounding the ball in that scenario to begin with. I don't understand why that's happening. You're having a rookie inbound the ball in the most important play of the game when you have a vet point guard on the floor in Kojo. If Kojo's going to be on the floor, why is he on the floor if you're not trusting him to make that type of decision? The whole point of having someone like that on the floor, I would assume, is to trust him with making tough decisions and being the calming threat out or the calming player out there. You think that would be the player you want inbounding the ball. Now, another discussion could be had all entirely that we'll probably have later on the podcast, that why was Killian Hayes, who was having a really good game, not on the floor instead of Kojo? But that's something we could go on. That would take us down a different path that I don't want to go down yet. But if you're going to have Kojo on the floor, I don't understand why Kojo doesn't inbound the ball. That's first. Second, this falls, at the end of the day, it falls on Jane Ivey. Jane Ivey has to know how many timeouts they have. He has to know that they don't have any timeouts. He can't panic there, and he has to get the ball in. That 100% at the end of the day, 100% falls on him. 100% does. However, if you know that you're going to have your rookie inbound the ball on the most important play of the game with no timeouts, if it is true, if it is true that it was not made aware to him or was not emphasized in the huddle that it was not, that they did not have any more timeouts, if that was not emphasized in that huddle, that's a blunder. That's a blunder on the coaching staff. Like Bojan said, if you're going to have him inbound the ball there, it falls on the coaching staff, it falls on the vets, it falls on the assistant coaches. That should be something, even if you don't have a rookie bounding the ball, we've seen other players who aren't rookies have this kind of mistake. That should be something that is said probably 20 times in the timeout. We don't have any more timeouts. We don't have any more timeouts. Do not call a timeout. We don't have any timeouts. No matter what, do not call a timeout. Like, that should be reiterated over and over and over again. And with Bojan's quote, it's making it seem like, I mean, I don't actually not even see him. He flat out says that it's on us for not making sure for not letting him know that we had zero timeouts. That's not us assuming. That's not me running away with his words. That quote right there says that they did not let him know that they had timeouts or they had no timeouts beforehand. Now, Dwayne Casey later on, apparently to James Edwards, the third, he tweeted out that Dwayne Casey mentioned that the coaching staff didn't have timeouts. I don't see right now. I've looked through the other beat writers' tweets looking for quotes. I don't see any other beat writers tweeting that out. James must have asked him the question and picked up on it. From reading those quotes, I'm not in the press room. Obviously, if I was in the press room, it probably would help a lot more. I probably would understand what was said a lot more. But based off just the quotes, that calls into question whether Jane Ivey was told before this play that there was timeouts out there. And to go along with the fact that I was already calling into question whether or not Ivy should have even been the person inbounding the ball to begin with, that just makes it a double whammy, in my opinion, of mess-ups down the stretch. Actually, a triple whammy, because at the end of the day, Ivy can't do that. He has to know himself. So just multiple blunders at the end of the game, depending on what's the truth, on all accounts, from everyone, from the top bottom. And that's just something that you can't have in a game like this, especially in a game when you fight back, you were down damn near 30 points. You've played terrible defense throughout the whole game, except this fourth quarter when you've made this big run. You have a chance to tie the game or take the lead. You can't have that happen. You can't have that happen. It's a terrible way to end the game. It sucks that the game ended that way. And Jane Ivey was beating up about it, man. As soon as he did it and he saw the coaching staff's reaction, he was like, oh my God, just called a timeout. We didn't have a timeout. I just messed up so bad. And you could tell that he was beat up about it. Now, will that help him in the future? Hopefully it will. Hopefully he'll remember this moment for the rest of his career, that I can't do this again. I can't be embarrassed like this again. So hopefully that helps him down the stretch of it, or not down the stretch, but for the rest of his career. But yeah, man, it was some questionable stuff that happened at the end of the game. And like I said, depending on what exactly is the truth, it could be a blunder on multiple accounts from multiple people. So tough way to end the game, especially with how they fought in that fourth quarter. But at the end of the day, looking for that number one lottery pick. So I guess a lot of people are going to be happy nonetheless that the Pistons lost. Me personally, I'd like competitive losses, but I'd rather not losses come at like at moments that are probably going to be laughed at by people outside Detroit for the rest of the year. Like, I'd rather it not come that way, but it's being accomplished nonetheless. Anywho, coming up, I want to talk with you guys about how Bojan Bogdanović played in this game, how Jane Ivey played in this game outside of that moment, how the rest of this team played, and why they were able to make this comeback in the fourth quarter, and what they need to improve on to avoid going down by damn near 30 points earlier on, not having to make this kind of comeback. Coming up, I'm going to talk with you guys about that. But first, I got to tell you guys about one of our sponsors, FanDuel Sportsbook. The midway point of the NBA season is here, and now is the perfect time to download FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. because new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000. That's bonus bets back if your first bet doesn't win. Just download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. It's safe, secure, and super easy to use. Then you can bet on everything from the money line to point scores, the threes drained, a player prop that I've been really going to over and over again. It didn't happen in this game, but it's been a pretty good bet for me. I feel pretty confident with it. Is Jane Ivey's over on assists? He's been much better as a passer, something that I've been really looking at possibly doing over FanDuel over and over with the player props. Plus, with FanDuel, they let you combine your bets for a chance at a bigger payout with the same game parlay. So don't miss the chance to get your no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 in bonus bets when you go to FanDuel.com/LockedOn. That's FanDuel.com/LockedOn to learn more. Make every moment more with FanDuel, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons, hit that subscribe button, or leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. That's another great way to support the podcast. So before we get into the individual performances that stuck out from this game and takeaways from that, I want to talk about what the Pistons need to do to avoid these early, just going down by like 20 points in a game and having to fight your way back all the time, allowing 38 points in the first quarter. It feels like all year this team has given up damn near 40 points in the first quarter over and over and over again. It puts them behind the eight ball so bad. I know they scored 36 in the first, but when you set the defensive tenacity at that level, like look at the next two quarters. The Bulls score 31 in the second quarter. The Bulls score 32 points in the third quarter. It's just, you can't start off that way defensively. It just sets the tone, and the other team just takes advantage. You can't have that kind of thing happening. It falls on the defensive end. I know the Pistons are shorthanded right now. I know the Pistons don't have a good wing room. I've called it the worst wing room in the entire NBA. I understand all of that, but it obviously wasn't that bad. It obviously was good enough for you to get back into the game. It was good enough for you to hold them to 16-point scoring in the fourth quarter. It was good enough for you to time the game very late in this fourth quarter. There's no reason why they need to be allowing 38 points in the first quarter. Just last game, they allowed 41 points in the first quarter. There's no reason why that needs to be happening. And no matter who you're putting on the floor, that just comes down to effort. That comes down to communication. That comes down to attention to detail. You just can't have that happening. It just can't happen. And another thing is, another highly questionable decision that I'm going to be sitting here questioning, is Zach LaVine scored 41 points. He hit some tough shots. He did. But he didn't look like... The tough shots that we think they were, it didn't look like they were tough shots to Zach LaVine. He didn't look like he was busting a sweat. It looked like it was just easy to him. And a lot of that, I believe, now he did score a few times on Killian Hayes, but a lot of the fact that it just felt so easy to him, and he didn't feel like he was really being, you know, pressured. He didn't feel like it was really something that he had to try hard for, was because the Pistons decided to go Rodney Magruder as his initial defender on the floor and put Killian Hayes on Alex Caruso hiding out in the corner. Now, look, I don't know if there was some big galaxy brain thinking going on where, like, oh, we're going to put Killian Hayes on the corner guy and just have him roam after the as the offense plays out. I don't know if that's what it was. I highly doubt that. But my thing is, and look, I'm not saying it would have changed anything. Maybe Zach LaVine still goes off for 40 points, but it just comes down to, that's not the point. If you have a player who's on the floor and he's your best perimeter defender on the team, and that's where he gets some of the most value he has, and he's at that position, why is he not guarding the best team's player on the other end when they're in the backcourt? Why is that not happening? Like, why? Why is that not happening? It's just something that doesn't make sense to me. Again, maybe Zach LaVine still goes off for 40 points, but it wouldn't have been as easy. It wouldn't have been just him walking into stuff. Like, I don't know. It's like, the point I'm trying to make with that isn't that, oh, Killian Hayes would have locked down Zach LaVine. No, that's not the point. My point is that why are you not using the players you know, in the best positions possible, or putting them in the best positions possible, or using them to their best abilities. Like, why would you have a lockdown defender, or a really good defender? Let's not call him a lockdown, but a really good defender on the floor, the best perimeter defender, and not having him guard the other team's best perimeter player. And then putting him on a player who's never going to touch the ball in Caruso. It's not like he was guarding DeRozan. He's guarding a play or Patrick Williams for the majority of the night. He's guarding Caruso. So you just have him being wasted. You have that defensive, the perimeter defense being wasted on a guy in the corner who's not moving. That doesn't make any sense to me. So those are some of the reasons why I think the Pistons fell behind so early, and they just had to strain that kind of stuff up. It all falls back on the defensive end of the floor. But for the reason why they got back into the game, Bojan Bogdanović got caught on a heater, was just burning the entire second half, really. He looks so much better, man. When you are running actions for Bojan, he looks like a great player. When you have Bojan running pick and rolls, being trapped, being pressured. When you have Bojan Bogdanović isoing at the top of the key, being pressured. When you have him doing that kind of thing, he looks pretty bad. That's not his game. He turned the ball over twice. He should have had about two or three more turnovers, because he's not capable of making reads out of those situations. He doesn't have a tight enough handle for that, which is one of the things the Pistons were doing too many times in the first half with Bojan. Now, as the game went on, they started running action for him. They started running actions to where he could just catch and shoot the ball. They had him coming off flare screens. They had him coming off pin downs. They had him coming off double screens. They had him just moving around and running actions for him to catch, shoot, or catch and drive. It wasn't, oh, we're going to give you the ball, come down, pick and roll, make a read, make a corner skip pass, if the guy tags down, makes you make that read to the wing. Like, he's not that type of player. We've seen that all year, yet they continue to do that over and over. So I don't know why they continue to do that, especially when you see how well Bojan can get going and how hot he can get when you just run actions for him and keep it simple for him. Bojan's a fantastic shooter. He's a fantastic scorer. He's not a fantastic ISO player from the top of the key. He's not a fantastic pick and roll player when it comes to making reads and when guys start getting up into him. There's no need for doing that. And there's a reason why the Pistons started coming back at the end of the game, because all they did was run off-ball action for Bojan, and he was just destroying the Bulls. They couldn't answer it. So, I hope you can only hope and pray that, like, they see this film and this becomes something they do more of with Bojan and start eliminating in the games he does play, because I'm assuming he'll start getting shut down soon. But in the games he does play, we start to see more off-ball action ran for Bojan rather than him just getting the ball at the top of the key, calling first screen, and trying to run a pick and roll. I hope that that's something that we start to see more of, and this game is a perfect example of why. Jane Ivey, look, that the end of the game play was bad. It was really bad. There's no excusing it, okay? You don't want to pile onto the guy. You don't want to pile onto the kid. You know, it's a learning experience, and it's something that I'm going to assume he's not going to ever forget, and it should make it to where that never happens for him again. But outside of that, I thought this was a fine game from him. I don't think this was a great game from him. I thought he started to fall back into some bad habits in this game. First of all, he was extremely efficient in this game. He had 18 points in just nine shot attempts. He had the free throw line nine times. He only made six of them, 66%. I really would like to see him shoot a little bit better from the free throw line. But overall, he was really efficient from the floor. And I liked the majority of the shots he took. There was only one shot I thought was a bad shot, but that, who cares? Everyone takes bad shots within the game. So that's not why I thought he was falling into bad habits with. I thought he's continued to take the right shots, continues to get to his spots, and continues to play pretty efficiently on the offensive end when it comes to scoring. Now, he had four turnovers in this game to just two assists. And this is not – he didn't just have two assists because he didn't get the ball in his hands. He didn't get two assists because he was playing off ball. He wasn't playing point guard. No, he was still playing point guard. But I guarantee you, if you go back and watch four of his turnovers, every single one of his turnovers were from him trying to do no-look passes. And no looking it to a defender, no looking it to an empty area. And look, I get that flashiness is part of his game. And when you can use it to your benefit, great. Like that one dump-off pass he had to James Wiseman, I think it was in the third quarter. He went to the rim, went up with his right hand like he was about to try a dunk. Vucevic jumped up with him, and he looked away and just dumped and just flicked it back to his left to James Wiseman cutting down. That was a really good pass. That's an example of using a no-look pass to your benefit to get something open for a player. But doing no-look passes when you don't need to is something that he has a habit of. When you don't need to do a no-look pass, do not do a no-look pass. And if you do a no-look pass, you better make sure it hits, because if it doesn't, you deserve to get a ton of criticism for it. He did it 4 times tonight. Excuse me. So that's just something that I just wanted to bring up. Overall, I thought he played an efficient scoring game, and I think he's – I don't think he's anywhere near a good defender, even an average defender, even a below average defender. But I think you're starting to see him try a little bit more on that end. He's trying more. Still not good, but he's trying. Just I think that turnover, those 4 turnovers were pretty bad turnovers that I'm sure the coaching staff is going to look at after the game. They're going to go through with him over the tape and tell him, look, man, you can't be doing these kind of plays. Just make the right pass here. Just make a chest pass here. It's all good. It's all fine and dandy. So. Like I said, I love the fact that he plays with flair. And again, I understand. I played basketball my whole life. Doing a no-look pass definitely helps you in certain situations. You need to do it sometimes. But he has a bad habit of sometimes doing it when he doesn't need to. And that's an area that he needs to improve on. And I hope to see him improve on that as we move forward. Coming up, we're going to do our daily check-in with James Wiseman. And then I'm going to go on a rant about a decision that was made in this game that just makes no sense to me at all. So stay tuned. But first, you guys got to hear from some of our sponsors. So I want to thank you guys again for making Locked On Pistons your first listen of every single day. We are free and available on all your podcast platforms. If you haven't already, head to the YouTube channel at Locked On Pistons. Hit that subscribe button or leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. That's another great way to support the podcast. All right, so just real quickly with our daily check-in of James Wiseman. Not a great game from Wiseman. 7 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists. He did have 1 pass to a backdoor cutting Bojan Bogdanović that I did not think he had in his game at all. It was a fantastic pass from the top of the key, a backdoor pass. It was an overhead bullet that he threw. It was a fantastic pass. So that was intriguing to see, and I wonder if that's something that can get unlocked within his game. I hadn't seen anything at all of that beforehand. So I don't know if that was just like, oh, he did that once. You can't assume that he'll be able to do that again. But it was intriguing seeing him do that. My eyebrows were raised. I saw it happen. I was like, whoa, was that Wiseman or was that Jalen Duren? Like, it was an incredible pass. But outside of that, he wasn't really featured in the offense at all. Only 5 shot attempts. I thought he was just, he was okay. Like, he wasn't bad. He wasn't good. I thought he was just out there. And I think that's a real big, like, negative with the Pistons is that James Wiseman needs to be given the ball. James Wiseman needs to be made a focus of the offense. And Greg Kelsey was talking about it during the game. Last game, they were looking for him, and they were getting him buckets. He was going out there scoring. He's an offensive talent, extremely skilled offensive talent, a physical specimen, and a guy that runs the floor and constantly is stealing underneath the basket. And just too often, they just don't look for him. They don't give him the ball. He only had 5 shots in this game. That just shouldn't happen. It shouldn't happen. He needs to have more than 5 shots. And I think this team and his teammates are still struggling figuring out how to, like, mesh together, I guess, or how to use him. Because, like I said, 5 shots just isn't it. And one of them was him just catching the ball with, like, 18 seconds left at the top of the key to run an action. He said, screw it, I'm going to take a 3. So that I don't even know if I count that. That was just him saying, screw it, I haven't gotten a shot. Let me get this shot up. So really, he only took 4 shots within the offense. That's horrible. Him and Rodney Magruder should never be matching field goal attempts, okay? Okay, Rodney Magruder had 4. That shouldn't be something that happens. That's just a miss by the Pistons there. So hopefully they change that moving forward. That doesn't happen in the next game. But outside of that, I thought he was just he was aight, I guess. But I'm about to go on a rant real quick, guys. I'm sorry, but I have to go on this rant. Killian Hayes has been in a slump, and I've came on the podcast the last 2 episodes, and I've told you guys, if you're watching him play the last few games, you're starting to see him get out of his slump. He's getting to his spots again. He's taking shots that he's comfortable with. He's taking his middies. He looks like the same player that he did during those few months, except he's just not hitting as many of the shots. Beforehand, I thought he was playing like a different player, and he was forcing stuff. Last few games, he looked like the same player, just wasn't hitting enough of the shots. But I told you guys that he was coming back and he was going to have a good game soon. We were going to start seeing him play well again because you could tell by how he was playing. Now, in this game, this was the game. It started to look like it. In this game against the Bulls, he had 11 points, 7 assists. 3 steals, 2 rebounds on 5 of 9 shooting. One of the shots was a half-court heave at the end of the half, so really 5 of 8 shooting. He was playing really, really well. He was playing really well in the half court. He had a few really nice drives all the way to the rim. He was showing off his ability to snake in the pick and roll. He was getting to his spots over and over. He was playing a fantastic game this game. Fantastic game. But he only ended up playing 24 minutes. And Corey Joseph ended up getting more minutes for him. Corey Joseph played 14 straight minutes to end the game. Corey Joseph. Why? Why is that happening? I don't get it. It makes no sense at all. Kodjo came in with 3 minutes and 15 seconds left in the third quarter. He played the rest of the way. His only basket was at the very end of the game. He just threw up a shot and went off the backboard and went in. The very end of the game. That's his only basket of the game. For the entire fourth quarter, the Pistons were putting Kodjo on Zach LaVine. Swear to God, they were guarding him, Zach LaVine, with Corey Joseph. And for some reason, the Bulls literally just put Zach LaVine in the corner and didn't attack it ever. Zach LaVine got the ball twice by just going out himself and getting the ball and scored both times easy. It was barbecue chicken. I was sitting there just shocked that the Bulls weren't going to that over and over and over again. I couldn't believe that they were just putting Zach LaVine in the corner. But nonetheless, Killian Hayes, he struggled for the last, 2 weeks. He's been struggling for like the last, how long has it been? It's been like 13 games, 12 games. Despite that, you've played him a lot of minutes in those games that he struggled. You've played him in those games. But then when he shows that he's playing well, he's having a really damn good game. He's getting back to himself, as I said, over the last few games. In this game, it was really starting to come to fruition. In just 24 minutes of action, he had 11-7. He was playing really well. And his reward is to sit on the bench and watch an old point guard finish out a game and try to play small for the Pistons. What are we doing? Like, what are we doing here? What's the point? Why are we doing that? Not only did Killian outplayed Corey Joseph by far, like, it wasn't even close how badly he was outplaying Corey Joseph in this game. So I don't want to hear the whole, well, vet, if the guard's not playing, well, the vet's going to finish the game. That doesn't make any sense. Killian was having a great game. A great game. And he just got to sit on the bench and watch Corey Joseph finish it out. There should never be in a game where Corey Joseph is playing more minutes than Killian Hayes. Ever. Ever. It shouldn't be a game, especially when Killian's playing well. Ever. It should never happen. So, once again, this is another situation, like we've said multiple times in the podcast that I've come on here and ranted about over and over. This is yet another game where Killian Hayes and it's happened to Jane Ivey multiple times too. We've complained about with Ivey, but this is again, and really, you could look at Ivey in this game. He only played 31 minutes in this game. He had 18. What would happen if he played 35 minutes in a game? Oh, God forbid, he's 20 years old. He's saving him for the playoffs. Like, what would happen if he played 35 minutes in a game? He might have, like, 28 points in this game, 26 points in the game. Who knows? But yet another game with Killian Hayes has happened at least 10 times this year when he's having a great game and doesn't reach 30 minutes and can't turn a good game into a fantastic game. Multiple games this year, at least 10 of them, it's happened, and yet another game here. This should have been an easy 16, 18, and 10 game for Killian Hayes. Easy. It should have been an easy one if he reached 30 minutes of action. Should have been easy. Easy as hell. Should have been back-to-back double-doubles. It was easy with how he was playing. But yeah, he only plays 24 minutes. And now he doesn't get – his stats don't look as good, and he doesn't get to build upon a good game. I'm sure he feels great about that. I'm sure that feels like rewarding a player for playing well. That's my rant. It's been something I've complained to you guys about all year. It pisses me off. I don't get it. It makes no sense. It makes no sense at all, but it is what it is. It is what it is. What are you going to do? Can't do nothing. The Pistons get the next 2 days off until their next game. That's all I've got for you guys today, man. Let me know what you guys think about the podcast, what you guys thought about this game. Say in the comment section down below or over on Twitter at Kukahill. Thank you guys for making it your first listen of every single day. Hit that subscribe button to the YouTube channel. Leave us a 5-star review on whatever podcast platform you're listening to this on. I'm really mad right now. Like, I'm just so... Stay safe, everybody. Go Pistons. Till next time. Peace out.